Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another sparkling edition of Plank of the Week. These are coming around very, very thick and fast now as we enter the last month of summer. Good luck if you're away on holiday. I suspect, like most of us, you're not away on holiday because there isn't anywhere to go. But luckily for us, we have got a journalist from The Times with us. He is Ben Clapworthy for the first time on Plank of the Week. Ben, a very warm welcome to you. Thank you for joining us. And I'm hoping it's going to raise the tone to some extent of this particular weekly broadcast. Although Emma Webb is also here, who always raises the tone. So welcome back.
Say the opposite.
No, absolutely. Listen, I think that because Ben hasn't been here before, we should give him first right of the first plank of this particular show. What do you think? Should we do it?
Oh, yeah.
Ben, tell us who your first plank is.
Well, it starts on holidays, and it's Dominic Raab, our esteemed foreign secretary.
Yes, of course.
Now, I was going to bring a globe with me, but I couldn't fit it in my bag. He, within the last week, muddled up to a sort of spectacular extent on why France was given this special elevated status of being on the government's Amber Plus list.
Amber Plus, and it's the only country on there so far, isn't it?
It's the only country on there so far. We're told they're scrapping it now because it doesn't work and it's pointless. But where the confusion seemed to lay was that the Joint Biosecurity Centre, when presenting their evidence on why it should be given this special status of Amber Plus, was because a prevalence of the so-called beta variant in the Reunion Islands, which are 5,800 miles from mainland France.
Right. And is it the Reunion Islands, or is there only one of them? Is it Reunion Island?
I haven't got the globe.
Because I always assumed it was a bit like Ascension Island instead of a completely different part of the world. But there's only one of them, I think. I'm not an expert.
But, well, us and Dominic Raab too, who said that the reason for its special status was because of the prevalence of the so-called beta variant, particularly in the Reunion bit of France. which was... Now, we mustn't forget as well that this was a man who was in 2018 said that he hadn't quite understood how reliant UK trade is on Dover, Calais crossing. So geography is...
He has got some form here, hasn't he?
He does. So
this might explain why the Foreign Office list of places you can go and can't go is different from the Department of Transport's list. Because clearly nobody in the Foreign Office knows where anywhere is.
Absolutely. I mean, clearly not. And then, just to add to it, Peter Ricketts, who's the former, British ambassador in France, waded in to point out an even more serious issue, which was that the Reunion is actually just on the normal Amber list anyway.
Right.
So people who had come from there wouldn't have to quarantine at all. So the whole thing muddled itself up and...
It's quite spectacular, isn't it? And Dominic Raab is quite a controversial figure because he does come out with some really... I mean, apart from the Dover thing, he could probably list about 10 other things he's come out with and said, which have all been slightly questionable, at least. I mean, I wonder why they ever let some of these ministers out on their own. I mean, Grant Shapps the other day was talking about how... you know, the pinging system works and how it's a good idea to make sure that people, when they come back from holiday, have to self-isolate if they get pinged, la-di-la. And he then said, oh, well, you know, the thing is, what we've now realised is that one out of every three people who self-isolate actually end up getting COVID. And everybody went, sorry, how do you know that? You can't possibly know that because you don't track and trace the people who have been self-isolating after they've stopped self-isolating. So how do you know? So he just made it up.
I mean, it's been a bad week for Rob anyway, hasn't it, with his whole coaxing and cajoling nonsense.
Yes.
And he actually came off looking quite well when that Labour MP was questioning him when she confused, was it Beirut?
Oh, that was Belarus,
Beirut,
wasn't it?
Beirut,
yeah, what are you doing about Beirut?
And he came off looking like he really knew what he was talking about, but
apparently
not.
She did him a massive favour. She obviously didn't know anything about reunion either, but that's a very good first nomination. Dominic Raab has been nominated before, but not for a while. So well done. And
well
who's
deserved.
Your first one?
The Prison Service.
Yeah.
So the Prison Service have issued new guidance suggesting, or I guess advising dog handlers that their dogs might have unconscious bias.
What?
And that dogs could potentially be racist.
Really?
They based this on a study apparently
that happened.
Is it a dog
that belongs to a racist?
Well, maybe. Yes, precisely that. So they were suggesting that actually the dogs can pick up the unconscious bias from the dog handler or from their owner. And they did this study in California where they took sniffer dogs around and they hid... it was supposed to be about explosives. They hid sausages for the dogs to find. And then in some of the places where they'd hid the sausages, they put a big red mark.
Right.
And they wanted to see whether or not the dogs could pick up on the handler's hesitance to go where the cross was, even if there was a sausage behind it.
Okay.
And so they...
What's this got to do with racism?
Quite. So they have inferred from this that, therefore, dogs can pick up on unconscious bias. And so rather than this just being about, you know, the particular... sort of fact of the study, they've extrapolated this and they're suggesting that it might mean that when a dog handler takes a sniffer dog up to an Asian person or a black person, that it can pick up on the racism of the handler and therefore the dog would treat people differently on the basis of their
ethnicity.
Do
more stop and search the dog.
I mean, it's
Does
amazing.
Does it also mean that
it's
police
amazing,
dogs are
it?
Institutionally racist then?
Well, obviously.
Well, they're part of the institution.
Yeah, but I mean, imagine having the time to even come up with that sort of study. To go, I know how we'll prove this, and we'll do something completely random with red crosses and sausages, because that's bound to be able to prove some kind of social, you know, directive that's going on in a dog's head. Huh? I mean, my other favourite dog story of the week was when Sage came out and basically said that, you know, that cull that they had to do of all the, was it the mink in Denmark? They had to kill all the mink in Denmark on the grounds that they were spreading COVID, that they might have to start killing animals in other parts of the world, and it could be that your pet might have to be slaughtered in order for COVID not to spread. And you're kind of going, these people are now actually insane.
Imagine if we'd done that. It would have been on tier levels. People in London would have had to have lost their pets first.
Yeah.
And then the North East.
Your fish is going. You've got fish.
That's mad,
they're
isn't
tier
it?
Three.
Did Chairman Mao did that, where he had
well, I think
that
was just the running dogs of capitalism.
We had cats murdered because he thought they were bourgeois. He had birds murdered because he thought he was trying to excuse the famine on the birds, and then it made the situation even worse.
Unfortunately, he didn't kill all the bats, otherwise we wouldn't be in this terrible situation. If he'd managed to cull the right animals, we'd be fine.
It seems to be a weekly theme on Plank of the Week. The animals, each week a different animal is racist.
I know.
Birds,
absolutely
dogs.
Incredible. So, by the way, also, finally, what's this got to do with the prison service? They don't run the sniffer dogs, do they?
Well, I think that they use sniffer dogs within prisons.
Oh, do they?
But presumably if someone's already in prison.
Why don't you just go into the guy's cell and go, oh, look, he's smoking marijuana. We'll have that. What do you need a dog for?
Probably too scary for them to do that.
I mean...
Too threatening.
One of the things, I don't know whether this is still the case, but one of the few places you could still smoke was in prison. When they banned smoking everywhere else, you could still smoke inside prison on the grounds that, you know, that was more humane. If you needed a cigarette, you could have one. Okay. So... they've been doing their own rules for the rest of the country anyway.
What do you do if you discover that the dog is racist? Do you put it down?
No. You obviously put it through a re-education program and make it start reading The Guardian, because that will solve the problem immediately. Ask it to vote Remain, because they're not racist. It's just the Brexiteers that are racist, obviously. I suppose you could ask the dog if it voted for Brexit, and that way you would know immediately if it was racist. Right, I'm going to go for the Highway Code as my first nominee, because I don't know whether you noticed that they've now rewritten the Highway Code, because apparently it didn't work very well. I don't know that many people that even know the Highway Code terribly well, but apparently we are now, as car drivers, the absolute lowest of the low. So if you drive a car, particularly if you don't drive an electric car, if you drive a car that you have to fill up with petrol or diesel, you matter not a jot to the people that run the roads of this country, because far more important than you are cyclists and pedestrians. And they've actually issued now a new edict that says that if you're driving a car down a road and a pedestrian steps out in front of it, you have to stop. And rather than being kind of sensible about it and saying this obviously only applies to crossings, pelican or zebra or whatever, it doesn't say either of those things. So basically it's given some people the idea that you can just literally walk out in front of a car and it will have to stop. And while that may well be good and safe to do, it's not going to happen, is it? People are going to get knocked over. People are going to step out.
This sounds like it's the opposite of what the Highway Code is supposed to teach people how to be safe with respect to roads. Right.
So are they reprinting the Highway Code?
They will be reprinting it, yeah.
I hope they include, in Bristol, the council have recently painted a rainbow pelican crossing.
Have they?
Which I thought sounded highly dangerous, because motorists won't know whether to stop or
is
go.
Is it with stripes?
It is with stripes, yeah.
So this isn't the one that the horses were afraid, the transphobic horses didn't...
There you go with your racist animals again.
So hopefully that would be included, because I did ask our transport correspondent what the rules were, whether you actually have to stop at a rainbow crossing.
Well, that's a very good point. Well, they've done a lot of weird things in Bristol, haven't they? Also banned diesel cars as of this year.
Quite possibly. It's where I'm from. It's a mad system.
It is mad, isn't it? Yeah. Well, they don't like statues, and they don't like diesels, and it's completely mad. But they've also. No, but here's the thing: they've said to car drivers that you are now required to ensure the safety of all people on bicycles. Mm-hmm. I.e., you're not supposed to drive at them. Well, I mean, the other Highway Code didn't say you were supposed to drive at them either. You know, I don't think anybody actually does drive at cyclists. But what it also says is that cyclists don't have to be in cycle lanes, even though we've spent millions and millions of pounds building all these cycle lanes. They don't have to use them if they don't want to. And you have to give them priority at every junction. If they're coming towards you and you're going that way and you've got to turn right, you have to let them pass.
This sounds dangerous.
It sounds really dangerous because, of course, what they've effectively done is they've said to the cyclists, look, we know you didn't really like the rules in the first place, so now we're actually giving you permission to completely ignore
them altogether.
Don't even worry about it. And if there's ever a collision, it's always going to be the driver's fault.
Well, that's the point. So presumably the police are going to start citing the new Highway Code, which no one's going to read because they don't read the existing Highway Code, apart from doing a theory test when you learn all the signs and click on the hazards.
Do you know what I noticed the other day? And I was with my son in the car and I said, have you noticed how many signs there are everywhere? We've become obsessed with signs. This is one of those things that you'll only notice now that I've told you. But once you're in a car or a cab and you're going down a street, there are literally signs everywhere. You know, turn right for this children's centre, which if you didn't know was there, you wouldn't know that the sign was there. You know, turn left, stop. You know,
there is a campaign to reduce the number of signs on our roads.
Is there?
Yes, because they're...
Well, I'd like to join it.
Because they're so confusing to everyone that there are so many signs.
Yeah.
And you do notice it.
And you look at a lamppost, there's about five different signs on it.
Well, also, at the moment, of course, all the streets are cluttered up with social distancing bollards that make them look like sort of the Monaco Grand Prix.
And you know what else? You know what else I've noticed? There's something very weird going on, and you might think I've got a bit mad here, which is entirely possible, given the number of days off that I haven't had. There's some kind of weird thing going on with temporary traffic lights, where in lots of parts of London, they've taken the real traffic lights out, and they've put in these fake temporary ones. And I actually drove past a pub just outside of Blackheath the other day, and there was literally, I kid you not, 50 temporary traffic lights just piled on a pavement as if they were being put somewhere.
In combination with the low traffic neighbourhoods, it feels like they're trying to turn the whole of London into the Tour de France.
Yeah.
Just cones, for cyclists going at 100 miles everywhere. An hour.
Yeah.
Red and white bollards.
Yeah. But I wonder what this... I'm going to find out what this temporary traffic light business is about, because there's obviously something going on which we don't know about. I find it quite sort of sinister.
The changing of traffic.
Yes. What are they trying to do? Well, how are they trying to nudge us now?
Yeah, I know. But what was wrong with the old traffic lights? I don't know. Anyway, so the Highway Code gets it for me. Who's your number two, Ben?
I thought I would go with the Olympic high jumpers.
Ah, yes.
Our Qatari friend Barshim and our Italian friend Tamberi.
Yes.
Who both decided in their own decision that they would both win gold.
It's great, isn't it?
They had been they'd both managed to clear 2.37 meters twice. On their third jump, they both knocked the bar down. They were offered the opportunity to take part in a jump off by the referee. I've watched the video. The Qatari says, well, can't we both win gold? The referee, sort of, I don't know, the umpire, whoever you call him, sort of looks a bit perplexed. The Italian looks a bit perplexed as it's sort of trundling through his mind.
Yeah.
Then he sort of dives onto the Qatari chap, wraps his legs around him in some sort of slightly bizarre display of excitement.
That's what I call a high jump.
There and then they've decided that they're both going to win
and
gold.
And you know, the funniest thing about it was the justification from the people that supported it, who thought it was lovely, was that they were really good friends. Well, I'm sorry, it's not about, you know, agreeing with your mate who gets the gold medal, is it?
Well, I mean,
that's not really the Olympics anymore.
Slightly odd. And then it's quite interesting. The first time that there's been a joint Olympic podium since 1912, which makes a lot of sense because that's how competition works.
Yeah.
That you have.
Is it any coincidence that the First World War started 2 years later? Not between the Italians and the Qataris, obviously. But no, it's a really bizarre. Yeah, it was a really bizarre thing to happen. There's somebody pointed out, I talked about this on my show, and somebody pointed out, he said, surely if that had happened, they should have shared the silver medal rather than the gold one. But I bet you they didn't want to share the silver medal.
Well, there was no silver medalist. There was just a bronze medalist afterwards. So he was probably slightly unhappy.
So does that mean that all you have to do if you want to share your gold medal with your friend is to do some kind of Borat-style wrestling with them?
Yes.
To hold the umpire hostage
also,
until they give you both gold?
Surely you would just continue in the jump-off.
Yeah.
It's not, I mean, they'd
well, the jump-off, people who are on the side of this, right, and I don't wish to polarise everything, but I'm afraid it does get polarised because all the same people that you would expect think this is great are all the people that disagree with me about almost everything else that I think. And they were all going, well, the thing is, you know, they'd been trying for about an hour to beat each other, and they hadn't. They'd managed to not jump any higher than, I think it was 1.79 metres or something like that. So their logic was, well, since they tried for an hour, they should just agree it's a draw.
They should keep jumping until one of them is exhausted.
Yeah. Because
put an alligator on the mat and see which one.
Well, exactly. That's the Olympics I would watch.
Now that would make me watch sports.
Now we're talking.
It just was bizarre. I mean, honestly, and it's, you know, it's classic, isn't it? We've got it already in schools that when I was at school, you was taught if you came second, you were the first of the losers.
Yes.
Which seems to be a. And now you have children that everyone gets a prize for turning up at the egg and spoon race.
Well, they do it this way now, where they got teams, right? Mm. So if your son wins a race and you go, oh look, you won, which I used to do when they used to do a lot of that, and then they wouldn't get anything for it, but their team would get points, and so then their team, they allowed the team to win.
Well, it's like that famous line from Alice in Wonderland that all must have prizes.
Yes.
In so many other respects, we've gone through the looking glass, but now finally, it's literally taking on the form of Alice in Wonderland.
That was school sports days, and now is the Olympics. I mean, it utterly
what's the point? I mean, it's like the Laurel Hubbard thing as well. I mean, it's making a mockery of the whole idea of competition.
Yeah, and yet this is the same organisation that was insisting on these Danish girls wearing bikini bottoms to take part in an athletic enterprise. You're kind of going, sorry, how do these things all tie up into the same organisation? Oh, you must wear those. Why? Well, we quite like the way you look in them. I mean, at least if they said that, at least you could have had some sympathy with them. But they were like, no, they're much better for that sport. You know, of course they are. Ridiculous. Madness.
Well, the men are instructed that they have to cover up, and the women are instructed they have to have their
take off all their clothes.
Well, I must admit, just before the show started, I was watching the men's 400 metres, something where there was an awful lot of lunch boxes on display, which I know quite a lot of women quite like looking at. No problem. You know, but that's just the hypocrisy of the organisation that gets me. And they all go, oh, this is fine. And all these people justifying it, saying, well, you know, lots of people in lots of sporting situations have a draw. Well, not really. Not if you know you don't have a draw in the World Cup and you both take the World Cup home in football.
Share
you don't have
it for 2 years.
Wimbledon, somebody wins it every year. They
or
don't
that
go,
they decide that they've been playing tennis for too long and it's quite hot. I mean,
and it's, we're all exhausted. Let's just give the cup to both of them.
I've sat through many a tennis match that I've hoped would finish sooner than it actually has.
Well, I actually had the chance to go to Wimbledon finals day this year, and I was like, you know, I can't be bothered sitting there for 5 hours today. I'm not going. I won't send my son. But
well, everyone was clock watching at Wimbledon this year, wanting to get home for the football anyway.
Yes. Well, that was a waste of time as well, which also, funnily enough, ended in somebody winning.
Well, maybe we need to have some version of penalties for high jump.
Well, I think Gareth Southgate doesn't like winning. I mean, that's why he keeps losing, you know. And people go, hey, don't you can't say he lost. Well, you can actually, because he did actually lose.
First of the losers.
But he got into
the final. and then lost. You know, it's an actual word, winner or loser, or one of the two.
That's offensive.
I know. That's unbelievable. Who's your second one?
My second is brilliant. It's Piers Corbyn.
Oh, yes. So,
Piers Corbyn, he got hustled or pranked by two YouTubers.
Yes.
And they met him in some kind of cafe and said to him that they were shareholders in AstraZeneca. Would he be willing to essentially focus his criticisms on Pfizer and Moderna, yes. and they offered him 10 grand. Right. They actually had 10 grand.
I'm told they took out their own money. They had money from the bank.
Yes, so they got out 10 grand. They put it in a little brown envelope.
A real
10 grand.
Yeah.
And then they had one of the other YouTubers' girlfriends come over, ask for a selfie with Piers Morgan, and then another...
Piers Corbyn.
And then they did the whole switch, the classic
yes.
switcheroo,
right.
and gave him a packet full of Monopoly money. And they caught him on film saying
and
that
he was
willing
And, of course, he defended himself later by saying, I didn't agree to anything, they've edited it in such a way as to make me look bad.
Possibly he was naive. He said that people had money to him all the time in the street.
Really?
Wow.
Well, that's because they think he's a tramp. Presumably think he's begging. What are you doing?
So they actually did the old classic switcheroo, and he ended up going home with a packet full of Monopoly money.
Yes, having agreed on camera, and I don't know whether it was edited in a particular way, because I'm not a particular fan of these kind of pranks, I have to say. But I think he was well and truly done over. I don't think his defence that, you know, he didn't agree to do anything. I mean, he's agreed to have the conversation where somebody has suggested
he should
stop criticising AstraZeneca.
He even started writing, he said that he would take the money, but he wouldn't agree to change his policies or anything because of it. But then he went on to actually take down a list from them
yes.
of positives
yes.
about AstraZeneca.
Mm.
So
well,
even,
there and then.
Yeah, and so even, and he's caught on film doing it.
Mm.
So even though he said that he, you know, was, and it's, what makes it particularly planky is obviously because he is the arch anti-vaxxer.
Yes.
And you know my views on things like vaccine
passports
and so on.
And he's not just an anti-vaxxer. I mean, he's a nutcase.
Yeah,
I'm sorry
I mean,
to say this, but I mean, he talks about 5G masts spreading
COVID.
Can
you imagine what Christmas dinner is like at their house? Actually, Tommy Corbyn, Jeremy Corbyn's son, tweeted saying, Pierce is a tit.
Did he?
Yes.
Really?
So their Christmas dinners must be wonderful, if they celebrate Christmas.
Well, to be
Christmas
fair, there's quite a lot of competition
don't.
In the family for that particular title.
Well.
You know, maybe they should share it. But the point is that, you
Shall
know...
a plank of the
yeah,
knockout.
And also, he shouldn't be... If he's so kind of anti-establishment, as he claims to be, and he's so anti the idea of a vaccination because it's, you know, two steps away from Bill Gates trying to poison everybody.
Mm.
You know, what's he doing to even talking to these people?
Well,
he
is,
should hate anyone that has
so
shares
this
in
this is exactly the point,
he?
Is that he's it's particularly plankish because he has held himself up as the arch campaigner. He was taking this money to support his campaign whilst at the same time showing himself to be eminently corruptible.
Yeah.
So all of the people who actually do look to him as spearheading this sort of anti-vax campaign will now be thinking, this guy's a crook.
Yeah.
Well,
except incredibly, there were people jumping to his defence, and you can imagine who they all were. And they were all people who don't believe that the sun rises and sets. You know, they're the same people who think
that
everything.
People that went to Jazz Fest.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want to see your globe because they think the Earth is flat. You know, and they think it's all a construct, and man didn't land on the moon, and it's all this kind of mad, crazy stuff. And they were all going, he's been set up, you know, by the establishment, AstraZeneca paying for this, and they're just trying to make him out to be a madman because
well,
they know
he certainly was
that
set
he's
up,
telling the truth. And you're kind of going, well, I'm not sure that's right.
He was only set up because he was willing to take money from people who had shares in AstraZeneca.
Yes.
I mean, you can't just say
I mean,
he was
I was listening
naive.
To quite a lot of the coverage of it as well, and people were like, if you had any sense, you would realise that, one, AstraZeneca are actually not making any money out of the sales, and they may make it in the future, but they're certainly not making any money out of the sale right now of any vaccine because they're selling it for cost or whatever. And so, therefore, you know, their share price has not been affected one way or the other.
Well, the YouTuber who bought the shares said that the amount of money that he made in total from buying £100 worth of shares was 7p.
There you go.
So.
Didn't even pay for the coffee there. Amazing. Yeah, Piers Corbyn's been on here before, and I think he very well deserved to be on it again.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
My second nomination is going to be Allegra Stratton. who was on it last week for the first time, thanks to her article in The Telegraph, in which she was telling everyone how to help save the planet by doing little things, like not washing your dishes before you put them in a dishwasher.
Which does just break your dishwasher.
The woman has clearly never eaten Weetabix.
No, I mean, you can't put, you know, dried on horrible foodie plates into a dishwasher because they won't get clean. I don't care how good your dishwasher is.
I'm a religious rinser of plates before they get into
dishwasher. So am I.
You're killing the planet.
So am I.
I'd take that. I'm not stopping doing it.
I mean, if you really want... I mean, I was giving these tips away last week for free. If you really want to use a bit less water, you just fill the sink up and soak them. And then that way you're not running water all over them. But it's the same, isn't it? People who've recycled bottles and go, oh, yeah, but I just have to rinse it first. You've already used half the world's water to put it in a recycling bin. What's the point?
People who rinse their cans.
Yeah, there's no point. What about milk cartons, though? I think you should do that, because otherwise they might get a bit rancid.
Possibly, I'm just lazy.
Yeah. She also said, you know, when
so
you go into the shops...
about your domestic life, doesn't it?
Well, she's never home. She's always on television, you know. When you're going to the shops, don't bother driving, just walk. Which, again, gives off this ridiculously kind of London-centric view of the world, you know, because if you don't live in London, where, yes, you can probably walk to the nearest shop, if you live... in any part of the rest of the country, like, you know, I don't know, Sussex or Kent. I mean, you could be 15 minutes away from the nearest shop in a car. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to walk. And also, it's quite difficult to carry a lot of stuff if you're walking, whereas if you're in a car. Anyway, she comes out this week and she's already upset Alok Sharma, who's apparently actually in charge of COP26, because he said that all of these suggestions that she made are very unhelpful and make us look idiotic. And he's right about that. But then this week she's come out and said that she drives a diesel Volkswagen Golf. Right? And she doesn't really think it's a good idea to have an electric car at the moment because they don't go very far.
And so she needs to drive long distances to go and get her shopping.
And this is the woman who's supposed to be this Prime Minister's spokesperson on COP26.
Well, she said she did it because she has two young children. I think she said they're 4 and 7.
Oh, yeah.
And the distance that she would have to go to visit family in Scotland would mean that they would have to stop for a long charge.
Really?
And that wouldn't really be feasible with a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old. But she hasn't taken from that, then, all maybe we should stop lecturing the public because maybe they also have...
This is,
you know,
the
they're not a train to Scotland.
Well, there is a train to Scotland. And, I mean, Peter Hitchens said this the other day. They're coming out with all these weird and wonderful ideas about electric buses that might be hooked up to an overhead power line. He's like, they've already invented the train, which does that, and is actually quite clean and quite a good way to travel. Why are they trying to invent different ways of making a train?
Some of these people have never been on a train in their life except for a photo walk.
Also, everybody knows that if you're Allegra Stratton and you have family in Scotland and you live in London, that you can't possibly stop on the way because you might meet some northerners, you know, which is absolute. And, you know, anything north of sort of, you know, West Hampstead, no chance. You don't want to see anyone from Wigan.
Some of these people sometimes manage to get themselves into first class.
It's absolutely shocking.
Do you think she's got the same car as Dominic Cummings that can get you all the way to Barnard Castle and back without the requirement for a petrol stop?
Yes, he didn't have to stop, did he?
He didn't, no.
No.
Hey, it's a remarkable fuel efficiency.
Well, I mean, maybe he was misreading the dial on the fuel gauge because his eyes, you know, aren't very good.
As we know.
So he might have thought he had plenty of fuel, but actually it was nearly empty. But he's got quite a big car.
He passed the test.
He did. He's got quite a big car, though, because, I mean, remember we used to see him coming out of his house with all these kids' bicycle helmets, and he'd open the... And it looked to me like it was either a Land Rover or a Range Rover or something like that. Quite a big sort of car. He's been plank of the week for the last couple of weeks because, of course, he's still tweeting away like a maniac. And nobody cares. It's
just
quite remarkable.
Just writing his blogs and his tweets.
It really is extraordinary, yeah. My favourite, I think we got him in last week, or mentioned last week, because he started tweeting about Britney Spears.
And why
everyone should get behind her campaign to rid herself of her father's conservatorship or whatever it is, you know, because it was so unfair. And you're kind of going, okay, now you've crossed the line. Dominic,
that's a very leaky remit.
Yeah, I don't mind you saying the Prime Minister's useless and he's like an out-of-control trolley, but I'm not having you talking about Britney Spears. I mean, whatever next? What's he going to opine on, you know, the X Factor closing down, you know, Love Island?
Maybe he's trying to transition into a pundit.
Yeah, maybe. He's not coming on my show anytime soon. So Allegra Stratton, quite rightly, as you say, completely unaware of anything that she's saying impacting anything else that she said before that everybody else should do. Incredible.
But no, even when she was doing the interview, she didn't seem to have any sort of self-awareness of how hypocritical she sounded while she was explaining the reasons why you might currently, under the current circumstances, need to stick with a diesel car rather than an electric one.
Well, I think they don't actually understand that they are hypocritical. I mean, it could be the only explanation. They can't possibly...
But we've seen this time and time again. It's one rule for them, it's another for everyone else. And so while they're lecturing all of us about how we should be behaving in the kitchen, next it will be the bedroom, you know, there's no area of life that they don't want to trace
into.
Well,
they've already started
telling
us what to eat and how to be fitter. And, you know, as somebody pointed out, and we'll come on to Boris later on, but, you know, Boris Johnson telling people about sustainability, you know, as he's about to become a father for the, you know, seventh,
no Harry and Meghan style awards for Boris.
No, absolutely not.
Single-handedly destroying the country, the world.
It's absolutely incredible. So, Ben, your final nominee?
Professor Neil Ferguson, who I'm sure is a favourite. He, of fame of breaking lockdown, having an affair, said it was almost inevitable that after July the 19th unlocking, that cases in the UK would reach 100,000. Then there was speculation of them reaching 200,000. We're now more than 2 weeks later after the unlocking. And how many cases are we on a day? 22,000. It's quite a long way from 100,000.
It really is.
Then, in the last week, he's decided that he'd come out with some more speculation, where he says he is now positive that the pandemic will be over by October. Now, he's made so many predictions, it's not surprising. I mean, I could make these predictions. So if I made as many predictions as him, one would be correct.
But one of them would be right. But he hasn't made one of them.
He's the original monkey on a typewriter.
He really is. But the trouble is that one of his latest predictions is that it'll all be over by the autumn. So I'm now going, oh, great. So Neil Ferguson thinks it's all over. That means it's not all over.
Definitely going into next year. I just thought, the amount of media coverage all of this got, it was bonkers. And the fact that he, you know, even then you have sort of modellers from the US who are calling him out and saying that, you know, he's just made so many predictions. He's consistently so overconfident. And why, you know, in this pandemic, so many of people have emerged as sort of rent-a-gobs that can go on and make predictions on things. You know, I see it in my job on people making constant predictions on what's going to be on green lists and amber lists for travel.
It's quite difficult to predict government policy these days. I mean, I actually used the words today, let's hope that Boris sticks with his latest U-turn. I mean, that's where we are. Yeah. You know, you wanted to stick with that U-turn, so it doesn't make another
going
one.
Round but and round and round. Yeah.
At least that's a political thing. This is a scientist who's 1 minute terrifying everyone again by saying, I have friends who are saying 100,000 cases. That sounds quite worrying. Mm. You know, we know that people who are jabbed are now getting ill as well. I've got a friend who's single jabs and is lying in bed feeling sick. You know, if you're telling people 100,000 cases a day, put the fear of God into them.
Yes.
And then, sure enough, 2.5 weeks later, they're at 22,000 cases. They're falling consistently. I mean, that's quite a margin of error.
Yeah, it really is. And also, the other problem for old Neil Ferguson, like a lot of these people in stage, is he's not actually medically trained at all. And we listen to these people as if they're all scientists. And I mean, you know, they're not scientists in the right kind of science. Behavioural scientists aren't scientists.
A lot of the when you see these open letters that have been signed condemning government policy, condemning the government deciding to lift lockdown, if you go through the list, a lot of them are like behavioural scientists and the nudgy types.
Yes.
But, you know, you just think that the reason why Neil Ferguson is in the position he's in must be because he has the same outrageous level of confidence that he makes in his predictions. That is just the reason why he's in the position he's in. He just truly believes in himself, even though he has no reason to.
Yeah, but if you in the media, right? I mean, if you started writing articles about what you thought was going to happen and they were all wrong, you wouldn't have a job for very long. Same with, you know, with your business that you're in, the think tank business. You know, if you started putting out papers that were apparently academic but were completely and utterly wrong and rubbished every 5 minutes, and if I did the same thing on the radio, you know, we'd all be out of a job. But yet he seems to not only not be out of a job, but he keeps getting new and better jobs. You know, he resigned from Sage at one point, and then we found out he was a member of something called Nerve Tag, which sounds like something
sounds
out
fun.
Of James Bond, Spectre, doesn't it? Nerve Tag. And he's still advising the government at a very high level. And you just think, how is this possible?
But are they not looking at his predictions and going, I mean, this is bonkers, isn't it? 200,000 cases or 100,000 cases a day 1 week, and then, it'll be over by...
It'll be over by... It was picked up by Keir Starmer, wasn't it? Because he very sort of animatedly attacked Boris Johnson a few Prime Minister's questions ago to say, what will you do when it's 100,000 a day? To which the answer is, well, ask me when it's 100,000 a day.
I think it's not Neil Ferguson that we should be attacking. It's the stupid people who keep listening to everything he says. Like, his imagine basing a criticism of the prime of all the things you can criticize the prime minister for at the moment. Imagine basing a criticism of the prime minister on something that Neil Ferguson said.
I know. But also, it's not even just the fact that they listen to him. It's the fact that BBC Radio 4, and particularly the Today programme, seem to think they need to interview him at least once a week. He's on there at least once a week, every single week. And you're kind of going, why?
It's the boy who cried wolf.
Yeah, I know. Shocking. Very good, though. Very good three nominations, I'd hasten to add.
Thank you.
Emma, who's your third?
BBC Sport.
Excellent.
They put up an article, a profile of Laurel Hubbard, the trans weightlifter.
Yes.
And it was just this puff.
Who didn't
piece
do very
entirely.
Well, as it turned out.
No, actually, in many ways, I think, to some people's disappointment.
Yeah.
And they put up this profile explaining why Laurel Hubbard is this sort of revolutionary, almost, you know, sort of spearheading figure in the trans sports movement. And it was criticised for being extremely biased, because obviously there has been a lot of debate around issues to do with trans people in women's sport and how that's unfair. And so it's a really big issue of public interest. And the BBC's article, obviously posted on Twitter, received a barrage of criticism for being biased. And rather than admitting...
It's a very confusing story, this, because people who object to things are quite often strange bedfellows, so that some people who agree with each other actually disagree about everything else apart from this. Mm-hmm. I find it all a bit confusing, to be honest.
And they... Well, there's certainly not very much disagreement in the comments responding to it on Twitter, that's for sure. Because people were really annoyed that they... That this article was so biased, didn't mention any of the ins and outs of the debate. It was just an entirely sort of glowing, positive profile. And they didn't, instead of admitting that, you know, maybe they should have given some attention to the critics, or maybe that some of the critics are not mad, crazy lunatics who are genuinely, they're just concerned about women's rights and fairness in women's sports. Instead, they then replied to their own tweet with a threat to people in the comments section, saying that hate wasn't acceptable, but what they meant by hate presumably was just people expressing gender-critical views, people with criticisms of trans ideology, not of trans people, but just of the ideology behind, you know, what was informing their article. And they actually said in the tweet that they responded with, in a statement, saying that they would report offensive posts, hateful posts, to the police. So they threatened...
This is mostly, your BBC at work.
Mostly women who were saying, you know, we're worried about losing women's sports, and they said, no, if you do this, we'll block you and we'll report you to the police.
But this is the trouble, isn't it, now, with all of these kind of issues which are contentious, is that you're not allowed to have an opinion which is not considered to be the right opinion. You can't just disagree with someone and go, well, actually, I don't agree with that, I think this. No, that you can't say that. That makes you some kind of horrible,
ghastly
individual.
activist tactic to say that if you criticise my view, you're hateful and you therefore must be silenced. It's a way of silencing your opposition. And so now BBC Sport have just jumped on that bandwagon and are using the same sorts of tactics to silence and I think the reason why I'm nominating them as a plank is because, you know, they're supposed to be journalists. This is an issue of serious, important public discussion, and their attitude is, we're going to report you to the police if you disagree with our editorial line on this.
And that's not really very fair.
And they're the national broadcaster,
and it's not very unbiased really either, is it?
No, quite. In fact, if anything, they've just proven the point.
But I suppose you could also argue that the BBC is not really necessarily the place for these arguments to take place either. So maybe they shouldn't have places for people to comment. And I know that's going to sound probably a bit fascist-like. Yeah, I know that you're a big believer of free speech.
Well, they've probably blocked everyone under the sun.
Well, they don't have comments on their website, do they?
No, I mean, if you can't comment, I mean, there's lots of things you can't comment on. Comments are closed off on certain articles in newspapers. I mean, everybody has to do it in a way, especially if it's one of those situations where people are going to say incredibly kind of inflammatory things, which you don't really want.
If it's legally contentious, so this isn't legally contentious.
No.
This is just the BBC getting upset.
It's important for them to be held accountable, though, isn't it? So if they're, you know, putting up articles that just ignore an entire half of the debate, and people want to comment saying, hang on a minute, this isn't on, you're supposed to be our national broadcaster, at least have some kind of pretense of being...
Maybe this is just giving her a gold medal, you know, for not making it to the final of the weightlifting category.
Well, apparently, because she was... made it to the Olympics. There was, I know absolutely nothing about this as a caveat, but another weightlifter, female weightlifter, she was given a sort of golden ticket to go to the Olympics regardless, but it still meant that that space couldn't be given to another woman.
Right. Yeah, and that's the inevitable kind of result of that kind of policy, that somebody's not going to be able to go because you let this person go. And I mean, presumably she qualified to go, but she didn't do very well, which, as you say, upset quite a few people, especially those who wanted to prove that she shouldn't have been there in the first place. You wonder whether she's thrown it deliberately just to disprove everybody's points. But I think we should also mention the BBC's coverage of the Olympics while we're at it, because they are pretending to be in Tokyo, right? Which is possibly the most ridiculous thing anyone who's
That's
run
possibly
a
more
sports organisation. Just totally ridiculous. I mean, they sit in a room like we do. We are in London. Behind me is St Paul's Cathedral. It's night time. You know, that, some of those things may not actually be
about?
The
That's
case.
Tokyo.
They've got Tokyo behind them. Because, I mean, we could put Tokyo. In fact, we should have put Tokyo behind us just to pretend that we're in Tokyo. But why would they bother? I mean, why didn't they just admit? Because I'm actually quite happy that they didn't pay nearly £1 billion to cover the rights for the Olympics for this one and the next one. Discovery Channel have apparently paid that, which is a ludicrous amount of money in my view. So I'm glad they didn't do that. And so therefore, why not just champion that and say, look, we didn't think it was a valuable use of taxpayers' money.
So we're in Salford.
And so we're now in Salford instead of Tokyo, and we're saving a lot of money, but we'll show you what we can. What would be wrong with that?
Nothing. I think people will be pleased. Yeah. The BBC will be
honest
for once.
Instead, they've deceived everybody into believing that they're in Tokyo.
The BBC deceiving people.
I know.
It does. You do also sit watching the television. It is always dark as well because they're.
Yes.
And they have their skyline of Tokyo. So
even during the middle of the day,
because it is the middle of the night in Tokyo, they sit and you have it on in the corner of the room, and it looks like it's sort of they're all sitting in a dingy little.
Maybe they couldn't afford the daytime shot of the Tokyo skyline, so they've only just gone with the nighttime.
They do nighttime coverage now. So I haven't seen it. I haven't watched it in the middle of the night to know what it looks like.
Tokyo at night.
One of the things they can't
images.
Do is show you anything really that's live, because they're not allowed to.
They can only do two sports at once.
Yeah.
And so people have been going on the red button and getting very upset that it's a choice between dancing horses and people.
Dancing horses.
Sounds like a wonderful set of decisions to
me. I mean, people say to me, oh, are you watching the Olympics? I mean, I think the Olympics became a farce many, many Olympics ago, you know, when they all started getting loads of money for doing things. And, you know, the idea of any kind of amateur athletics or any kind of amateur anything was out the window. And there's so much money involved that it can't possibly be viewed as some kind of pure, you know, battle of athletic prowess, because it's not. It's just a massive opportunity to get something sponsored, isn't it?
Yeah, I have to say I've got absolutely no interest in it at all. You know, I watched the 2012 Olympics.
2012,
I
thought...
watched the swimming.
I was actually swung around by that. That's probably the last one that I really watched, because I was very unsure of all this rah-rah, it's going to be great, and I was one of those sort of manky Londoners, and I was like, I don't want all these people coming to my city and holding up the traffic, and you won't be able to get on a train, it'll be a nightmare. And of course, everybody left, so it was empty. I remember taking my son, I got tickets to go to one of the football matches, and we came up from Sussex and went to get on the underground. There was literally nobody on the underground at all. And we walked to Wembley, didn't see anyone.
Because everyone had left London.
People had just gone, we're getting out.
They painted those Olympic lanes on the motorway for 2012 and never had to use them, because
yes,
there was never any traffic.
For the VIPs.
Yeah, there was no traffic.
So they didn't update the highway code for that.
No, they didn't. No, absolutely right.
They just fined you if you went in one, though.
Quite. So my final one is going to be, I think, not just John Smith, but this is a guy who you might not have heard of. He's the son of Harry Leslie Smith. Harry Leslie Smith was a famous kind of Labour refusenik, if you like, and he was once famously thrown out of a Labour Party conference because he wouldn't stop heckling. I think it was either Gordon Brown or Tony Blair. It was back in that sort of day, and he hated New Labour. He's one of those kind of dyed-in-the-wool socialists. Anyway, his son John is one of those who basically started slagging off Boris Johnson for having another child. And I mean, I know that we made a little joke about it earlier on, but we didn't do what he did, where he basically said this about Boris Johnson. Hashtag, Boris baby has no chance of growing up to be a decent human being unless social services were to put the child into care. Crikey. And you just kind of go, what? What's wrong with you? And of course, a lot of people on the left started attacking Boris. And for whatever reason, I mean, aside from anything else, part of the announcement was that Carrie Simmons had had a miscarriage. So, I mean, it's a kind of a no-go area. You don't go
piling
making
in.
Fun,
I don't
piling
really,
in.
I really don't understand what... I mean, I've also joked about the amount of children that he has and how horrible it must be to be stuck in a place with
thing.
A screaming baby with all that garish wallpaper around, and that it must be nauseating. But, you know, it's a joke. This, I don't understand what's going through
people's
heads.
It's just in very poor taste, it seems.
Whatever happened to the idea that, I mean, I know obviously all the climate change stuff, but whatever happened to the idea that children are a blessing and the more the merrier?
Yes.
Because I don't think, I mean, yes, he is a bit of a sort of, you know, he gets around a bit.
He does.
Boris does.
It's a very nice way of putting it.
But, I mean, you can't necessarily...
Not as much as he used to,
praise him for his fidelity, necessarily.
No.
But, you know, I just think it's a good thing. This Prime Minister has more... is the first Prime Minister since, I think it was 1800-something, to have this many children. That's a good thing.
He can't afford them.
Yeah, well, he keeps saying he's broke. I mean, the thing is that we can have this conversation and people will accuse us of being hypocrites, no doubt. Well, you're talking about it, but we're not being nasty about it. And I think
that's just vile.
It's just horrendous,
isn't it? One of the reasons why he probably can't afford them is because divorces are expensive.
They can be.
But, you know, if he sends them all to state school, it's not going to be that expensive. It's only unaffordable if he tries to send them all to Eton.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think that's off the table, unless he's getting it sponsored by one of his many donors. You know,
I'm sure he'll be fine.
I know I said it was for the wallpaper, but actually it's to put one of them into Eton, if you don't mind. But no, I just think there is a certain... I mean, I always say this, the left always called the Tory party the nasty party, but there is absolutely nobody as nasty as the people on the left. I mean, even Keir Starmer congratulated him and Carrie and said he wished him all the best. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the civilised world that we want to live in, isn't it? You don't want to have people literally locking horns on absolutely everything so that if something terrible happens or something good happens, you just dismiss it because you're a horrible, ghastly person. There were plenty of people from the left, I'm sure... who I could also name, who probably had higher profiles, maybe even than this guy, but he's got 300,000+ followers on Twitter.
Exactly.
He's not an insignificant figure. He's an author, you know, a bit like that guy Pullman, you know, the guy that does his Dark Materials, who seems to have become sort of Brexit deranged.
It's completely infantile.
And he's always slagging off the government, slags off Britain, hates people that live here, hates the fact that we voted to leave the European Union. Philip Pullman has made millions out of the public in this country because they bought his books, and you might like them, I don't particularly. But, you know, why is he so horrible? I just don't get it.
But it doesn't do any good for us on our side of the discussion either, because, you know, the same point was made about BBC Sport, that, you know, the whole idea that if somebody disagrees with your perspective, then you accuse them of hate and try to silence them.
Right.
The whole debate has become so infantile that when people do stuff like this, that when they actually, again, it's the boy who cried wolf, that when they do criticise the government for something legitimate, it doesn't seem like a legitimate criticism because they've already showed that their hatred of a particular political figure is coming from a place of just sort
completely
of
unfounded.
Yeah, it's childish, it's childlike.
Well, it's very hateful
and so
as well,
and so
it?
You wouldn't take anything seriously that he says now in criticism of Boris because you think, well, you just
sounds
hate
like
him, you hate his children,
spiteful.
You hate, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, absolutely horrendous. So what we've done now is we've got the 9 nominations. I always carry one over from last week and I haven't actually checked what the last week's tally was to see, but I will do so and bring one over from last week. Where are we? July the 30th was last week. I'll tell you who won last week in case you didn't see. Marlborough, the cigarette company, for trying to ban tobacco. You're going to go in, right? Okay, then.
But
Allegra
only in
Stratton
the developed
was second.
World.
The BBC was third. So I guess Neil Ferguson's in there as well. Well, I wonder who we should carry over. We'll think about that later on. So what we need to do now is settle down to one each, right? So, Ben, why don't you choose Emma's? So, Emma, you tell Ben what your three were. We'll
prison
go from
service,
there.
Piers Corbyn. Yes, Piers Corbyn,
not
Piers Morgan.
Morgan.
Oh. It'll be easy sport. You've given me a complex.
Legal flutter.
It is one of those, you just keep doing
it. Got the libel complex.
Yeah.
I think, surely, it has to be Piers Corbyn, because that is just spectacularly plankish, his behaviour.
It really is, isn't it? And, I mean, the thing about the BBC, I suppose, and not so much the prison service, but they can be on it again. And Piers really does stand out, I think, doesn't he? Right, so you've chosen that, so you should choose mine, right? So my three were the Highway Code. I'm going to say John Smith, but I'm going to sort of say Boris haters, I suppose, and Allegra Stratton.
Oh, Allegra Stratton is a tempting one.
Mm.
You know what? We'll go for the Highway Code.
Okay, that's a good one.
Wild card.
I like that. I like that very much indeed. Right, so I'm going to choose yours. So tell me your three.
It is Dominic Raab, our gold medal winning high jumpers, or Neil Ferguson.
Ooh, that is good. I think I'm going to go with Dominic Raab, because Dominic Raab really should know better. I mean, do they not have briefs anymore in government.
You know, well, as one spokesperson said of him, at least it would have helped if he was in the room when the decision was made, which is quite passing.
Interesting. Yeah, I think, yeah, Dominic, I think Dominic Raab. So we've got Dominic Raab, the Highway Code, and Piers Corbyn.
Unusual selection.
That's quite an unusual selection. We have to narrow it down. Of course, all of these will be in the top 10.
And these will be
the top three. So, I mean, it's such a spectacular error that I think Dominic Raab should be number one because it's so huge. How can you not know?
You expect plankery of Piers Corbyn.
You don't expect it so much.
Yeah, of our foreign secretary.
Yeah.
I just love the phrase, the reunion part of France.
The reunion bit of France. Yeah. That is... I read it twice. It's almost as if
somebody's kind of feeding it to him to make him look like an idiot.
You know, all those people on Twitter who were saying that the solution to the migrant crisis is just to reinvade and retake Calais. But it sounds like that might be what he's referring to.
Maybe that's where he thinks the reunion section is, just a bit north of Calais. Who can say? Well, listen, I think we've got a winner. So Dominic Raab, number one. Should we make the Highway Code number two?
Yes.
Piers, number three?
I feel like Pierce deserves to be higher up on that
list. I don't
mind.
I'm easy. If you guys think he should be number two, I'm quite happy with that.
He could be number two. Let's make it number two.
It is quite good, isn't it? All right.
I mean, imagine him getting home and opening a packet of Monopoly money.
And whatever you think, genuinely having thought there was.
You know what?
Hope he rang Mrs. Corbyn to say, "You'll never guess what I've just got." What? $10,000
We're probably going to buy a pack of Marlboro fags around the corner and got out one of his Monopoly notes.
Second-hand larder.
Sorry, this isn't legal tender.
Deary me. So, here's Corbyn number two, Highway Code number three, but the winner of Plank of the Week for the first time, I think, is Dominic Raab, the Secretary of State for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs. Well done, Dominic. Thank you to Ben Clatworthy and to Emma Webb, and we'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.